Do you need an introduction? Well, it's a great pleasure to have George Minich visiting us from Virginia Tech. And he'll give us a talk about transcendental meditation.
Okay, so it's nice to be here again, chat with this guy and everyone else. I want to tell you about some recent progress in analytic QCD, purity and Mills theory. And so I don't have to motivate by particle physics why this is important, right? Computing backgrounds, LHC, of course, for making sense of nuclear physics, astrophysics, and it's just very fundamental theory. So basically what I want to solve, right, what I'd like to solve is, half integral for some gauge invariant operators. For example, could be FD nu, could be whatever you want to write, right? These are traces of the non-abelian Young-Mills theory for SGM gauge group. Okay, and sources. We can either evaluate the correlation functions or always, or put some sources over there. So we are interested basically in computing the correlators of gauge invariant operators. And in particular, if you computed these correlators for well-spaced out points, we should actually find out the masses of the states that couple to these operators. So for example, for this operator, which is a scalar, has a parity plus and charge plus. This is a scalar blue ball with a parity plus and charge plus. And that's how these things are extracted in the lattice. Of course, F nu is defined as del nu A nu minus del nu A nu plus A nu A nu. And I should normalize it with some coupling here, like 2g squared or whatever. All right, we want to solve the Young-Mills theory, okay? Sounds like a formidable thing to do. And basically, in the last 30 years, what we've been doing is trying to do it on the lattice, and the lattice will play very important part in this talk, because in particular there are now very reliable data about 2 plus 1 Young-Mills for various groups, SU3, SU4, SU8, and then it's extrapolated to SU infinity. So we can even talk about the planar limit for 2 plus 1 Young-Mills, but I will also talk about 3 plus 1 Young-Mills. Actually, we'll talk about these in parallel. Okay? And so, since the 70s, we know a lot about perturbative theory. So here I'm forgetting about the quarks. We have recently started putting quarks in, but we want to understand the pure Young-Mills sector first. Globals haven't been observed. It's very hard to distinguish them from mesons, of course. And so I'm going to be comparing to lattice data. Okay. The most surprising thing about this, what I will be writing for you, is I will write a wave functional basically in terms of the magnetic field in 2 plus 1. This is just a scalar. So in the A0 equals 0 gauge, magnetic field is just del 1 A2 minus del 2 A1 plus A1 A2. Okay, sorry, I switched from X and Y to 1, 2, 3, or 0, 1, 2. And also psi 0 of a vector in 3 plus 1. Where, of course, this is much more complicated. A0 equals 0 gauge. Let me write in Vi is equal to x times jk, f jk, where f is defined like that, and I go as 1, 2, 3. And actually, I want to write down a calculable wave functional. There will be a discussion how close this is to the exact state, but you will see that it will basically reproduce the data in an incredible comparison with lattice. Actually, here for the states 0 plus plus, 1 plus plus, 2 plus plus, all the way to spin 6, it will be totally indistinguishable, statistically indistinguishable from the lattice. In particular, let's see, the mass of this will be less than 0.8% of the mass that's computed on the lattice. Okay? for the excited states like 0 plus plus star and so forth, it will be say 2 plus plus star, 0 minus minus star, and so forth. Excited states, here I could have had also 0 minus minus and so forth. It will be 10% or sometimes 15%, and it's actually not, it's outside the error bars from the lattice data. Here it's inside the error bars, so statistically indistinguishable, and it's very surprising. Okay, and here, so I will call that excellent, at least for these guys, but here we'll have something which is to 0 plus plus less than 2.6%, and then for other states like this, I'll call this very good, because actually the claim for the lattice people did actually much better than this. So this is already outside the error bars for the lattice. Okay, so now you might look at this and say, like, how the hell can happen? This happen? Okay, so I'll have to give you the whole lot. First of all, how would one even approach this problem? And of course, for years people have thought about this, and we're not the first. We're actually building on the work of a lot of people. Let me write the names, and also names of my collaborators. So this work is done in collaboration with Bob Lee from Illinois, and Alexander Yelnikov. Our postdoc, and now he's City College moving to Santa Barbara, and then Laurent Rodel from Perimeter Institute, but it's built on the work of a lot of people. Caravalli and Nair are sort of the ones that we really like to single out, but the formalism they use goes way back to Yang and Bars and Feynman. This is the mains. Okay, so what's being done here? Well, let me give you an argument that recently I think I started persuading myself that it's sort of most rational, nice, heuristic argument to give. Okay, if I gave you the Hamiltonian from given that Lagrangian that I wrote down, everyone knows what it is. It's 1/2 integral, the electric field, which is the F0i component, right? Let's say G squared with scale, and then plus 1/g² magnetic. Everyone knows this is the electromagnetism, except, of course, now we have these non-abelian pieces. Okay, and this, as I said, it's Fij, that's my mind. Okay, and so you might say, like, okay, let's see what the Heisenberg uncertainty principle will tell us about this. And you will recover basically what we already know. The photons, first of all, the electric field is the conjugate to the potential. In other words, the canonical conjugation relations are really like this, Ij, and if you put the group in this is V. But anyhow, the uncertainty of the electric field in A is of order 1. So that means that the uncertainty of the electric field in V, if I take into account just perturbation theory, right, would be of order K, the momentum, right? So we plug it in and compute the energy, like we do for the harmonic oscillator. We get a G squared, K squared, over delta V squared, if I apply delta E. And here I would get, let's see, delta V squared over G squared. I minimize the energy, like we do for the harmonic oscillator, with respect to delta V squared, plug back in, and I find the minimum energy. You want to have a seat, or? Okay. The minimum energy basically goes SK. Like, because delta V squared, you can see the delta V squared goes as just by minimizing this. So, of course, this is a photonic relation. There's no gap in the spectrum. Okay? So this would not be, of course, correct because there is a non-abelian part of this. So where have we gone wrong? How do you incorporate the non-abelian part? Well, you see, the Heisenberg relations, remember, are always written for some operators that value certain states. So I have to tell you how the dispersions are evaluated for the states which are properly normalized. So for example, if I wanted to write two states, the overall of two states, I would have to write it in terms of where either the original measure, but taking into account the non-abelian gauge invariance, or let's say in terms of these gauge invariant quantities, the gauge covariant quantities like the magnetic field. But then of course I would have to figure out what the Jacobian is. And this formalism that I will be mentioning outline in a second actually tells you what it is. Right? It's some expression in terms of B, okay, involves the rank of the B group, for example, here. It's an expression, it's actually like an effective action. Okay, and that actually, and of course now that we have psi star B1 and psi 2 B. Okay, so this will define the measure, and it turns out that this I of B, it's actually the quadratic order integral B, 1 over number squared B. Plus, there is a closed expression. It involves some very nice theory called Gage-Poisson-Whitmull, but let's not go there. The whole point is that the probability distribution in the measure is peaked around delta B squared of order K squared. So that means that the kinetic term E squared is of order G squared in this case. Remember that in 2 plus 1, G squared, the Taft coupling, has the units of mass. As a matter of fact, I will be using a precise formula from this formalism, which is like this. Okay? In 3 plus 1, of course, the g squared n is dimensionless. Okay? And what happens actually in 3 plus 1, and this is something that we did, okay, is that in 3 plus 1, basically all these vectors, you replace this by vectors. These are now not integrals over b2, but three-dimensional integrals. This is still not plus squared, but you need a mass here. And actually, this becomes a mass. Okay, what stabilizes this mass? What stabilizes this mass is basically the dynamics defined by this effective action, two quadratic order of this theory. And actually, one can stabilize the mass in 3 plus 1. I can mention this to people who are interested. There is a mechanism. Okay, and roughly, you can basically say, like, look, this looks basically like gauge potential, because this is the derivative of gauge potential, derivative of gauge potential perturbatively. This goes k, k, k squared. So this is like a gauge potential n. But of course, if I wrote it in terms of gauge potentials, it will not be gauge invariant. This is, of course, gauge invariant to quadratic order, right? Because I'm using gauge covariant things. And so therefore, if I did a gauge rotation of the gauge potentials and then integrate over the potential, I will get some sigma model whose dynamics are larger than I can do. And actually, I can relate this mass m to the one loop beta function in the theory, 3 plus 1 theory, for which I will write the wave functional that has exactly in the limit, ultraviolet limit, the right behavior needed by asymptotic freedom and the beta function and everything. Okay, so be that as it may, this basically tells you that the mass is generated by the kinetic term. The delta B, the spread in the magnetic field, is not fixed by the Heisenberg certainty relation, naively, okay, perturbatively, but it's fixed by the measure on the gauge invariant product that defines a normalizable gauge invariant inner product on a Hilbert space. These are now wave functionals. This is what I want to figure out. Okay, so this is, I think, a new insight that sometimes, well, in 2 plus 1, I think this people have tried to say this for some time, and I think in 2 plus 1, given this formalism, Caravella and Nahiri, it was for the first time possible to even write this. Okay, and then by extending this to 3 plus 1 with Laurent and Lee and Alexander Yelnikov, you can actually do it even in 3 plus 1 to this order. Stabilize the mass gap. And then notice what happens then. If delta B squared is of order K squared, see? If delta B squared from the density in the measure, okay, which makes the inner product normalizable, if that's of K squared, that means that epsilon, well, in 2 plus 1 just goes as g squared, right? K squared is canceled, plus, of course, order k squared over 2. Now, that's exactly an expansion of a relation which we'll write as a gap squared plus k squared. So gap is of order g squared, which is, of course, the mass. Okay? You can put the rank of the gauge group, and everything goes nicely, as it should, with the top coupling and so forth. Okay? What about in 3 plus 1? In 3 plus 1, actually, there's this m. Okay, which is then stabilized. I said this is actually related to the cutoff in the one loop beta function. There's some specific number over here, 8 point something. Well, roughly 10, let's say, of the cutoff in the one loop beta function for the famous beta function with the 11/3. Okay, and so this is stabilized dynamically, but then the gap is given in terms of the stable these things, and then of course the top the dimensional. The coupling is also related to a value, to the stabilization mechanism. All right. So there is a way to generate the gap, and for that, the crucial thing is to understand the gauge invariant product on the Hilbert space. Okay? So having said that, I think, I hope you have a picture of what's going on here. We're dealing with the strongly coupled theory. We're trying to understand the vacuum of the strongly coupled theory. We're using the usual physics of quantum theory. We are realizing that there is something missing in that physics, which is provided by this missing information in 2 plus 1 provided by Carvalho-Meyer, 3 plus 1 by us. And that tells you that the gap in Young-Mills theory comes out from the kinetic term.
I'm confused about why this looks like it's just an order g squared instead of...
Well, you
like
see, because...
E to the minus 1 over g squared non-interpretive.
Delta b squared, you see... no, delta b... So the gap should go as g squared, okay? Because g squared is dimension full, right? And gives,
well, now I thought you were talking about 3 plus 1.
In 3 plus 1 is dimension less.
Right.
Right?
So the usual...
So it goes...
It's non-perturbative is the gap in 3 plus 1.
No. It goes precise. So the non-perturbative effect comes in basically from the relation between mass and the one-loop beta function. And this g squared n actually happens to be related to something like this, 4 pi. I forget now what exactly. I think it was 3 beta 1 or something like this. So g squared at a certain value, it's fixed at a certain value, okay, for which you can then relate the mass, okay, the dynamically generated mass to the scale of the one-loop beta function. We can discuss this if you want more detail in private. But there is a way to generate this, to stabilize this mass that is needed for dimensional reasons.
Why do you keep calling it a mass if it's dimensionless?
N is dimension full. Okay?
And how can it be g squared n?
But g squared n is dimensionless.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Okay, so what I'm saying is that epsilon, I'm sorry. M is of order this, okay? So the epsilon is n squared g squared n. I'm sorry I wrote it that way. Okay, so epsilon is the mass times g squared n. Look how it goes here. Delta b squared, okay, is n k squared. So m comes here with the g squared, as it should. I'm sorry. All right. Okay, so that's the argument, but there is also a total technicality evaluating this and then dealing with this. Okay, the dynamics of this to stabilize this, because otherwise it would just be, again, some floating scale. All right? Okay, so now if we understand that T is crucial for generation of the gap, we have to see how actually T acts, well, what the spectrum of T is, and in particular can that tell us something about the wave function, and in particular the wave function which will give us all these nice results. All right, so let's do that. Okay, so how would we even begin writing the wave function of such a strong interacting systems, right? This is something with Feynman wanted to do in the 1980s, right? And he wrote the natural proposal. Well, first of all, everyone knows what this looks like on Abelian theory, right? You can write it explicitly. It's an exponent, minus 1 to 2t squared, integral, and it's actually a universe in 2 plus 1 and 3 plus 1, just b's become scalars and vectors. But let's say in 2 plus 1 or 3 plus 1. Okay, in 3 plus 1 there will be vectors. Okay, so this is consistent with just basically, if you were just to solve this, okay, if you were to solve the Hamiltonian acting on psi, which is E, remember E is conjugate to A, so exactly like in Maxwell's theory, so E is just a minus I delta of A. So it's just a momentum. Right? So it's just a minus, and then you have d squared, l squared over y squared, right? The Maxwell's theory, everyone knows this computation, right? Okay, psi is equal to zero. I'm subtracting the vacuum energy. Now let me just remind you how you do this, because this will be a very motivating factor how to actually get this other result. By the way, why did Feynman get discouraged in 1980s? Because you see, if you write anything that is not computable, you can't make any progress. Right? If you know a wave functional, at the end of the day, you want to compute things. So you want to compute, like, I don't know, phi zero star, I don't know, trace f mu, trace f mu, psi zero star. right? That's the expectation value, if you know this axis. That's like doing a path integral, right? So now a wave function is as difficult as doing a path integral. So if this thing is not Gaussian or expandable around the Gaussian, okay, but still it has to be gauge invariant and so forth, then you won't make progress. Okay? So it will be very crucial to write sort of a self-consistent Gaussian, but I will also discuss the issues of gauge invariance, because we will write a non-Gaussian gauge invariant expression. Okay. Alright, so anyhow, from here, how would you get this? Well, you just write psi is equal to exponent of p. Okay, there is a kinetic term, t. There is this potential term, which is just b squared, right? Act on the psi, and what do you get? You get tp plus integral lp over del a, lp over del a, right? Plus half b squared, psi is equal to zero. The thing is, when you do this computation, you get an infinity, you subtract this, how t acts on this p. P is just this, okay? As a matter of fact, I could write this p as an integral b, some kernel of, let's introduce the notation, L is nabla squared over n squared, where I'm going to introduce some mass parameter here for dimensional reasons, because I want to use the nabla squared, knowing, of course, what the result is going to be nabla squared. But then I'm going to be, if I put that in here, then I will have to write minus 1 over 2 g squared n squared. B, A of L, B. Okay? And then this M will have to cancel, which it does. Okay, so you plug that back in, okay? And from here, from this part, you get L, K squared. From here, you just get a 1, okay? And that actually gives you solution of this equation. L, basically, K becomes 1 over square root of L. If you take a square root of nabla squared m squared, n is going to cancel the other thing. Actually, here it's just an m. N will be giving this famous result. Okay? So the crucial point here will be that the kinetic term, action of the kinetic term on something that will be in the ansatz for the exponent, exponential ansatz for the wave functional, okay? A gauge invariant ansatz, will not give a subtractable, infinite but subtractable to zero result upon regularization, so the vacuum energy is zero, but actually will give something finite and change this equation for the kernel into a differential equation which will have a radically different form. Okay, so how do we get that T acting on P? What could that be? Okay, P basically being this. Okay, and of course this is gauge invariant. Look how it's written. It's written that basically on the outside we have the quadratic order in B, as it should be because of the matching to the ultraviolet. But in here, in principle, we could have some Taylor expandable nabla squared over m squared. Okay, nabla squared is gauge invariant operator, right? So in principle, we should be able to do this. Okay, but there will be a crucial piece of information that we'll have to use. Okay, so that's how the action of T based on this intuition. Will be given. Now, for that action and also to explain the form for the measure in the inner product, I have to introduce that new formula. Okay. So at some point, some piece of new technology will have to enter. Okay. What is that piece of new technology? Well, since 1970s, we knew, right, that we could work either with gauge invariant operators, like this one, trace FMU, right? And there's an infinite number of them, and try to rewrite the whole theory in terms of an infinite number of operators. Doesn't look like a normal field theory. As a matter of fact, it was always a motivation for something that goes beyond the field theory. It has an infinite number of operators, like something called QCD string or whatever. Okay? Or alternatively, to work in terms of traces of path integral exponents, which formally will have been in correspondence, okay, with this infinite number of operators. So basically, you take a contour, you take a path integral exponent of a contour of a nu, dx nu, okay, for an arbitrary contour, and you take a trace, and you get a Wilson loop operator. Okay, one of the indications of the confinement, and they will also compute that, is that for very large Wilson loop operators, we'll have to compute this. We'll have to get from the wave functional okay, to compute this operator e to the minus sigma a, we'll have to get some formula for c. Because at the end of the day, the things will have to measure n00 plus over square root of c, for example. And those are the numbers that we compare to the lattice. That's exactly measured on the lattice. Okay? So then, someone said, Toft or whoever, right? Oh, just take this, right? Just take the path integral. If you could change variables into something like this, of course, now you have a Jacobian. You can write the Jacobian as exponent log of the Jacobian that takes you from AU to WC. Of course, you can compute it, except conservatively, maybe. And then rewrite the action, Young-Mills action, in terms of the WC. Again, very complicated to do. Okay? And then the idea was measure this sort of entropy factor. Remember, it comes from the measure. It should be compared to that measure in the inner product versus this energy factor. See if they can balance each other. They balance each other only in the larger limit. Find that minimum, expand around it, diagonalize. That's how you would get the thing. Of course, it's an impossible procedure, right? Because how are you going to do this? Right? So what we are going to do, what we are basically doing here is reinventing this procedure for something totally different. Instead of having an arbitrary loop, we'll have very special loops. We'll have straight loops that go to a point. Okay, so basically, we will have something like a loop, right, that depends basically on this going to a point. Okay, and that would be, path integral exponent integral along this, let's say, x-axis. Okay, to this point x here. So along this axis of AU. Okay, the interesting thing is that you can actually invert and you can write the potential in terms of this n. Okay, this is what Carabelli and Ian Meyer did. Let's write this. Okay, so basically in the Hamiltonian formalism. Okay, this is basically what you do. In the Hamiltonian formalism, A0 equals 0. This is not the first one. Okay? You take combinations of x, y, and I, y, or 1 and 2, how I called it. I'm sorry. Call that A, and the other combination, A bar. And represent this, just invert this relation. Just write A as m to the minus 1, del z m.